I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is October 17th, 2010. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, also known as AFTA, was holding an anti-gay rights Truth Academy. These comments were taken from a panel discussion titled, Can the Effort to Mainstream Homosexuality in American Culture Be Stopped? The panel featured all of today's speakers, along with Greg Quinlan from the Pro Family Network and Matt Barber from Liberty University. The discussion begins with Matt Barber, who says, We should not be politically correct. Matt, I agree that you should not be politically correct, but not for the same reason that you do. To be politically correct is to be wrong, but for a reason that is deemed correct by current social standards. If something is right, there is no need to put the adjective politically in front of it. It is simply correct under any social standard. Matt continues. It's natural for gays to be reviled. Matt, you're going to have to do better than that. Justifying hate and discrimination by calling it natural is not gonna fly. Based on 4 billion years of evolution, killing is natural. But in our modern world, it is no longer right. He said, it's important to focus on the health risks of homosexuality. Okay, Matt, and then after we've done that, let's focus on the health risks of your religion, such as abortion clinic bombings, killing homosexuals and non-believers, witch burnings, exorcisms, and leaving kids alone at a Catholic church. Matt continues, but we need to be aggressive and unapologetically loving. Matt, why would anyone need to apologize for being loving? Oh yeah, I forgot about Christ's priests. Now I see your point. Don't worry, I haven't heard the church doing much apologizing for their pedophile priests. They seem mostly concerned with protecting them. Now Greg Quinlan takes the floor. If you Bible thump or talk about sex, it turns pro-gays off. If you give them the science, you sound like someone in authority and they don't know how to respond to that. Greg, the people who don't know how to respond to someone in authority are called religious people. And by the way, what science? Your hate does not come from any science, only from an ancient book of magical fairy tales. Now Cliff Kincaid gives it a shot. This issue of homosexuality affects you because gays are demanding to give blood. The hemophiliacs are outraged by the homosexual lobby saying they have a right to give blood. They want to force themselves into the blood supply in a callous and arrogant manner. Mothers need to speak up. Mothers, your children are at risk. So Cliff, I guess that means most priests will now be prevented from giving blood. And since almost every gay politician that comes out lately is a conservative, Bible-thumping Republican, then I guess they should be prevented as well. Okay, that sounds like a good idea to me. Now Greg Quinlan speaks again. The church has to be involved in politics. Greg, if you want to be involved in politics, then start paying your fair share of taxes. As long as you people refuse to contribute to the defense and maintenance of our nation, you have not earned the right to be involved in politics. Greg adds, politics are dirty. Okay, Greg, I take it all back. Religion does belong in politics. Greg said, our founding fathers were all religious men. Greg, your history teacher should be fired. He said, they weren't all just deists. So, Greg, now you admit that you just lied. You knew that all of them were not religious men. You can tell your history teacher that he can have his job back. He said they were Bible-believing men. Greg, deists are not Bible believers. Greg goes on, we do have the truth, and the truth is this. Greg, let me interrupt. Claiming you have the truth is insufficient. Everyone claims to have the truth. You must prove you have the truth. Greg continues, a family is made up of a mother and a father, because it takes a mother and a father to raise a child. Greg, millions of single-parent families disagree with you. And another embarrassing note for you, many of those fathers who deserted their children were Christians. Now Lori Higgins speaks. Parents need to remove their children from public schools. Why, Lori? She says, even after doing that, they need to make law changes because our taxes go to the public schools. Lori, if you remove the tax money necessary to support public schools, then we will be left with only private religious schools. Okay, now I see your goal. A theocracy like Iran. How charming. She said, when we are silent on this issue, we teach our children through role modeling to be cowardly conformists. Lori, when you teach your children through role modeling to be obedient servants to an invisible ghost, how do you conclude that they are any different from those you accuse of being cowardly conformists? She said, we bequeath a legacy of much greater oppression to our children and our grandchildren. Lori, if you want to see a legacy of oppression, just review the last 2,000 years of Christian history. She said, at least I can say to my children that I did everything I could. Lori, wait a minute. You have children? You mean there is some guy out there who actually does you? Now Rena Lindvaldson speaks. We need to work completely to eliminate public schools, government schools, and push a Christian biblical model of educating our children. Allahu Akbar! And if these nut jobs succeed, we will all be kneeling and praying in the direction of Bethlehem 5 times a day. Now Ryan Sorba speaks. We need to unify behind common winning talking points. Ryan, science does not have to unite behind common winning talking points. It unites behind evidence. If you had even one scrap of evidence for anything that you believe, you wouldn't need to unite behind common talking points. Ryan continues, boycott the term gay. They are in no way attached to any kind of identity because it's not an identity. They're not functioning in accord with their design. Ryan, when Catholic priests molest choir boys, are they functioning in accord with their design? Ryan said, we need to repeat over and over and over again that there is no scientific evidence that people are born gay. Ryan, it is irrelevant whether scientific evidence supports that theory. Even if they are not born gay, why do they need an excuse to choose to love someone of their own sex? They don't. And it is none of your business if they do. Ryan said, there is no study that proves causation. Psychiatrists need to reclassify homosexuality as a mental disorder. Ryan, I will agree with you on the same day that they do the same with religion. Now we hear from Peter LaBarbara. Born gay evidence is unreliable. There was once a pro-gay activist yelling as loud as he could that I was a maniac who wanted to kill gay people. This shows how unstable these guys are. Peter, you are in serious need of an introductory course in logic. Those three sentences are not logically connected. Born gay evidence has nothing to do with an activist shouting out insults, nor whether or not that person is unstable. Ryan Sorba jumps back in. Genes code for proteins, not for behaviors. Ryan, when Peter enrolls in that introductory logic course, Maybe you could get yourself into a basic biology class. Between the two of you, you might be able to get them to offer you some kind of a discount. Once in that biology class, you will learn that our behaviors are greatly influenced by the genes that code for proteins. But if I were you guys, I would stay away from geology class, because the things they will tell you about Noah's Ark will likely cause both of you to lose your lunch. He continues, the born gay thing is a debate that we're definitely going to win. Nobody's a meat puppet dangling from the strings of chemical reactions of their brain. Yet you yourself, Ryan, believe that you are exactly that. You believe that an all-knowing, omnipotent, invisible ghost has complete control over the entire universe, including all living things. Why do you criticize a belief which is a mirror image of your own beliefs? He said, it's letting your emotions rule instead of your reason. Ryan, you're kidding, right? Let me get this straight. A ghost worshiper is lecturing someone on using reason? You're going to have to give me a minute after that one. I have to take a knee. He continues, it's a debate about if you're able to define reality versus your ability to intellectually understand the reality of the world around you. Ryan, dude, you believe in invisible ghosts, unicorns, and fish that can sustain human life for 3 days. What could you possibly know of the reality of the world around you? He continues, we should be able to argue for the recriminalization of sodomy and overturn Lawrence versus Texas. The punishment would just be a fine. It would inhibit gay nightclubs from springing up where AIDS is spread. Ryan, why do you assume that sodomy is only a gay activity? Since gays comprise less than 5% of our population, and since only half those are men capable of committing sodomy, it is probably true that far more heterosexuals engage in that activity than homosexuals. Just a quick question, Ryan. Do you ever think anything out before it dribbles out of your mouth? His next brilliant comment, it'll inhibit pornography. Ryan, once again, pornography is just as prevalent among heterosexuals as it is among homosexuals. So what has it got to do with your war on gays? He said, you're not born gay. It's a vice. These people need help. Ryan, I feel the exact same way about your religion. Although I would probably replace the word vice with sickness. Now Matt Barber speaks again. The reality of ex-gays poses an enormous threat to the homosexual movement. Their entire argument hinges on the immutability of homosexuality. No, Matt, it doesn't. The fact that you can terrorize people to the point where they will give up something does not mean that they have changed. It only means that they have taken the steps necessary to survive in a society that will threaten them with punishment or death if they don't. Peter LaBarbera pipes up again, this time discussing lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender protesters. He said, they come there with their hateful signs. Peter, you are a completely oblivious hypocrite. You have just described Christians at abortion clinics, war hero funerals, gay parades, and anywhere else that one finds discriminated groups. He continues, this is the level of fanaticism we're dealing with. How would you describe the level of fanaticism at a Christian witch burning, at a crusade into Muslim countries, Christian inquisitions resulting in executions? I could go on, but the list is just too long, and I know you have more neat things to say. And now, Matt Barber speaks. At gay pride parades, they have sex in the street in front of children. Well, Matt, then figure out a way to keep your kids away from the parades. Cliff Kincaid speaks. Left-wing student groups are leading boycotts of blood drives because they're discriminatory. This movement is expanding. If this keeps getting bigger and bigger, we are going to face a shortage of blood. Cliff, if there is one thing that Christians have never been short of throughout their 2,000-year history, it is blood. Kincaid continues, it's extortion. I remember when AIDS happened. Cliff, close your Bible and turn on a television. AIDS is still happening. Cliff says, I remember covering this. You have to be older to understand what is happening at this time. Okay, Cliff, we're all very impressed by how old and wise you are. So what's your point? Cliff says, I really don't think a lot of the young people today remember the panic and catastrophe that enveloped the nation because of AIDS. They don't understand how it developed. They don't understand the devastation. Cliff, what the hell are you talking about? You speak as though it has been cured and eradicated. AIDS is still every bit as dangerous as it ever was. Since your God refused to help us out, our doctors and researchers have developed treatments that have greatly extended the lives of those infected. But the battle still has a long, long way to go. That is, unless you are aware of some miracle cure that none of us has heard of. Now Ryan Sorba speaks. Of course, romantic attraction can happen between any two people, but the question is whether it adheres with the good. Okay, Ryan, translate that for us. Ryan said, a thing is good insofar as it helps actualize the potential for humanity. Well then, Ryan, I guess we can move your religion out of the good column since the only thing Christianity has accomplished is to squelch humanity's potential. Ryan said, man is a rational animal. Ryan, that only applies to those who are rational. Since you believe in invisible ghosts, that pretty much leaves you out. Ryan said, his final end is to know God and truth. Ryan, the problem with that is, once one knows truth, God is dismissed. Likewise, knowing God eliminates any chance of ever knowing the truth. Ryan said, truth means correlation with reality. Exactly my point, Ryan. You just conclusively proved my last statement. There is nothing in your Bible or your beliefs that correlates with anything that we see in reality. He said, absent truth, what's the point? Once again, Ryan, we are in total agreement. Ryan said, absent correspondence with reality, what are we doing here? Dreaming? Ryan, I would call what you do conscious dreaming. It is difficult to control what we dream while sleeping, but there is no excuse for what you do. Now my final comment. These people do not represent mainstream Christianity. Hell, they do not even represent Jesus. At least not the one described in the New Testament. You know, the guy who taught us to love our enemies, to turn the other cheek. The guy who taught Christians how to pray, not like hypocrites, but in private. These people seem to have never heard of Jesus. They certainly don't follow any of his teachings. Who they do remind me of are the hate-filled puss bags at the Westboro Baptist Church who protest at the funerals of war heroes. Pastor Terry Jones, who threatened to burn Korans before being talked out of it by half of America. The Illinois Family Institute, which dedicates its time to fighting homosexuals while true Christians spend their time trying to do Christ's work. These people have more in common with witch-burning inquisitors than they do with modern American Christians. When an atheist has to explain to Christians how to be Christ-like, then you know they must have flown off the highway somewhere along the way to their destination. Okay, I see we have a guest, guest three. Welcome to the Skeptic Arena. Okay, let's see. He has a comment. Guest three's comment is, you remind me of the communists who killed 60 million Christians when they got power. Guest three, why do I remind you of communists who killed 60 million Christians? Guest 3 replies, the level of hatred you're spewing is very much like they spewed. Okay, guest 3, how do you know? Were you there? In other words, what do you base your statement on? Guest 3 replied, I had relatives in Russia at the time. He believes that he answered the question by the fact that sometime in the past he had relatives in Russia. This is what passes for thinking in the irrational mind. Now guest 3 says, they told some interesting stuff. Wow, that's very convincing. With proof like that, I don't even know how to reply. Guest 3 replies, so firsthand accounts don't count in your worldview. How do you figure relatives telling you interesting stuff is a firsthand account? A firsthand account would be you telling me something. You don't even know what a firsthand account is. Guest 3 replies, you're an idiot. And for those of you who can't see the screen, he doesn't know how to spell your. He said, idiot, I never said I was there. My relatives were. That wasn't my question. My question was, why do you think that's a firsthand account when you're telling me something that someone has told you? That is not a firsthand account. That makes you the idiot. And why don't you use a spell check or a dictionary or something while you're writing this stuff so I don't have to figure it out? And the brilliant reply from guest 3 when he has no answer for anything I've asked him is typical atheist. And then he hung up and left the chat. Another fantastic display of the irrational mind trying to sputter down the highway of life in first gear. And now for the science segment. Today's topic, plants kickstarted evolutionary drama of Earth's oxygenation. An international team of scientists exploiting pioneering techniques at Arizona State University has taken a significant step toward unlocking the secrets of oxygenation of the Earth's oceans and atmosphere. Evolution of the Earth's multitude of organisms is intimately linked to the rise of oxygen in the oceans and atmosphere. The new research indicates that the appearance of large predatory fish, as well as vascular plants, approximately 400 million years ago, coincided with an increase in oxygen to levels comparable to those we experience today. If so, then animals from before that time appeared and evolved under markedly lower oxygen conditions than previously thought. The researchers, including collaborators from Harvard, Denmark, Sweden, and the United Kingdom, made use of a method developed at ASU by Ariel Anbar, a professor in the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry at the School of Earth and Space Exploration in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, and his research group. The method can be used to estimate global oxygen levels in ancient oceans from the chemical composition of ancient seafloor sediments. Their important findings are presented in a paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, titled, Devonian Rise in Atmospheric Oxygen Correlated to Radiations of Terrestrial Plants and Large Predatory Fish. Anbar, who leads ASU's astrobiology program, explained, there has been a lot of speculation over the years about whether or not oxygen in the atmosphere was steady or variable over the last 500 million years. This is the era during which animals and land plants emerged and flourished. So it's a profound question in understanding the history of life. These new findings not only suggest that oxygen levels varied, but also that the variation had direct consequences for the evolution of complex life. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Microbial life has probably thrived in the oceans for most of that time. However, until about 2.3 billion years ago, the atmosphere contained only traces of oxygen. During that time, some microbes in the oceans likely produced oxygen as a byproduct of photosynthesis, but the quantities they produced were insufficient to accumulate much in the atmosphere and oceans. The situation changed with the Great Oxygenation Event 2.3 billion years ago. Oxygen levels rose again around 550 million years ago. The first animals appear in the fossil record at this time, marking the beginning of an era that geologists call the Phanerozoic, a Greek word meaning evident animals. This new work explores how oxygen levels change during the Phanerozoic. The new study was led by Thais Dahl while he was a postdoctoral student at Harvard. Dahl returned to ASU to perform the measurements for this study, which involved measuring the relative amounts of different isotopes of the element molybdenum in rocks called black shales. These rocks are formed from ancient ocean sediments. Isotopes are atoms of an element, in this case molybdenum, that differ only in their mass and therefore can be easily distinguished from one another. Molybdenum has 7 stable isotopes. Chemical reactions fractionate heavy from light isotopes. For example, carbon-12 is enriched by 3% in plants relative to the carbon in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Similarly, molybdenum isotopes are fractionated during their removal from seawater into ocean sediments. The magnitude of this fractionation is sensitive to the presence of oxygen. The data Dahl obtained at ASU reveal that there were at least 2 stages of oxygenation during the Phanerozoic, separated by the oxygenation event 400 million years ago. This inference from molybdenum isotopes is corroborated by the appearance of large predatory fish, up to 30 feet long, in the fossil record, 400 million years ago, coincident with the rise in oxygen. Animals of that size consume energy rapidly, requiring high levels of oxygen for their metabolism. Unbar said, "But the real kicker is that these data also show us the reverse, that biological innovation can drive environmental change." He points to the fact that vascular plants also appear in the fossil record around 400 million years ago. The bodies of such plants decompose with difficulty, making it easier for organic carbon to be buried in sediments. When that happens, the organic carbon produced by photosynthesis is not available for reaction with oxygen. The consequence is a rise in the amount of oxygen in the environment. The biological innovation of vascular plants led to more carbon burial, and therefore to more oxygen. Then the rise in oxygen made it possible for larger animals to evolve. And now we move to the religion segment. Today's topic, an article titled, Why I Allowed My Son's Brutal Circumcisions. Subtitle, It Hurts, But It's a Necessary Comfort in an Uncertain World. The article begins, Taffy Ackner believes that circumcision is brutal mutilation. So why did she subject her sons and herself to the traditional Jewish bris, even as she suffered self-loathing for what she was putting them through? She traces her Jewish upbringing, denouncement of religion, and eventual return to the faith in a thoughtful Salon column, ultimately realizing that even though she leaves room for the idea that religion is a made-up superstition, whose goal is to function in exactly the way I'm using it, she still needs to cling to it as a parent. My comment, the key phrase here is, leaves room for the idea. That means that although she has doubts about her religious beliefs, she doesn't have the courage to actually let go of them. This was also proven by her return to religious belief. She continues, Becoming a parent is hard. I am sometimes overwhelmed, merely driven mad when I realize how much is out of my control. And that's why she went through with the circumcision ritual. When I do it, I am asking God to share the responsibility with me. So, Taffy, you believe that by talking to an invisible man, you have gained some control? You have reduced your responsibility? Circumcising your sons is one of those things over which you did have control, and you even gave that away. That is why so much is out of your control, because you yourself are out of control. Taffy said, I will give you this, God. I will hurt my sons for you, and you, in exchange, will keep us safe. Lady, you are sick. Even animals are more fortunate than your unfortunate sons, who were put through an unnecessary, painful procedure so you could please an invisible ghost. She said, Let them live. Let them be healthy. Let their lives be easy. Let me merit the chance to see my children outlive me. Lady, if I had my way, everybody would outlive you. And for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Susan B. Anthony, born 1820, died 1906 at the age of 86. Anthony was a prominent American civil rights leader who played a pivotal role in the 19th century women's rights movement to introduce women's suffrage into the United States. She traveled the United States and Europe and gave 75 to 100 speeches every year on women's rights for 45 years. And now for the quote from Susan B. Anthony. "I distrust those people who know so well what God wants them to do, because I notice it always coincides with their own desires."
Are you ready, Goose?